Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. We take pride in treating every customer like family, because that's what has kept us around for generations.
During the Subaru A Lot to Love event, drive home a new 2025 Subaru Outback for 0% for up to 36 months.
Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 9/2/25.
Celebrate over 100 years of steak perfection during the Omaha Steaks Anniversary Sale. Save 50% site-wide on USDA certified tender steaks and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at omahasteaks.com today. Don't wait. Shop the Anniversary Sale at omahasteaks.com to save 50% on legendary steaks and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We continue to learn more and more about the case against Brian Koberger every single day. Obviously, he now is in custody, and he is in prison for the rest of his life. But what does the future hold for Brian Koberger? What do we now know about Brian Koberger that we didn't know at the beginning? How did this investigation all play out? Joining me is someone who's been going through those documents as they are released, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Jen, since the last time we talked about this about a week ago, I know more and more has been dug through. Bring us up to date. What are the new big pieces that we're learning about this investigation and how it all sparsed out?
Well, you know, Tony, it's so interesting, I think, to all of us who followed it from November 13th, 2022, to finally put a lot of these pieces together. One of the documents that came out that I really think provides very interesting information is from one of the first police officers that went into that scene. That police report particularly details more of Dylan Mortensen's what she saw. And so for the first time, we're getting to hear as an example that she believes Kaylee Consalves descended the stairs and was screaming. And in fact, thought she might have been the one laying in Zana's room. This is all information that we did not know before and is very interesting. She also talks about how she saw a 6-foot man, according to this police officer, exit and had something in his hand. I do not see any particular description, but we know now know it's Dylan that saw that. For a long time, people were speculating it was Bethany. And it isn't described very well other than something in his hand. As she says, he exited the slider and left the door open. So all of these are really just details that we didn't know before. This officer also describes the bloody legs of Ethan Chapin, of course, which another report had come out mentioning the fact that his legs had been mutilated. So some of these details as to what happened in the house.
And that's so disturbing. I mean, just to hear, and I don't want to, sit and simmer on the disgusting details of what Koberger did. The thing that she was they allege he was holding. We heard reports on that earlier, and it was originally talked about as being described as like a vacuum hose or something of that nature. Do you remember that? That was several months ago, while this was still in leading up to trial. I'm wondering what that might have been. Is there any speculation on what he might have had with him? Was it something to maybe do cleanup of some sort on this destructive scene that he caused?
Well, there have been too many you know, possibilities described, so to speak. And I'm really waiting on bated breath to see if we can have more of an indication of what he really had in his hand. Mm-hmm. It's confusing. Some people say, you know, there was a knife sheath or a knife sharpener, sharpener. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. A vacuum doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What makes a lot of sense to me is some sort of bag that would have held his bloody clothing as he left in a change of clothes or taken out the outer layer. That makes a lot of sense, but I'm sort of waiting for more details to come out, as I think they will when we get to see Dylan Mortensen's next interviews. You know, she would have been interviewed many times, and there's going to be a lot of debriefs.
It's interesting because the knife sharpener itself is interesting because I believe it comes with the kit that he purchased. And I'm going to bring it up here on the screen real quick so we can all see it. This is what the knife sharpener looks like for a K-bar knife. I could see someone seeing that thing going and saying, that looks like a vacuum hose. I mean, if you don't know what it is, I would maybe guess it's a vacuum attachment of some sort. But it does appear to be kind of a bulky object. We'll never really know for sure exactly what that was. And nor does it necessarily matter all that much right now. But it does kind of make you wonder what exactly that was. If he went in knowing he may need to resharpen his knife. I mean, that's another interesting part of all this, because we speculate and we wonder, did he go in there knowing that there was going to be four people that he was going to be taking out, or was all of that a very inconvenient surprise to him if he just had one of them in mind to attack?
I really believe it was very inconvenient, very unexpected. I think he was, you know, ready in case he would have been interrupted. But I think he believed that these guys all went out, they were drunk, inebriated, they got home at 2 a.m, and that they would be crashed out like normally on a Saturday night. And he would be able to go into the room of Maddie Mogan and do what he had planned to do against her. And then there Kaylee was, and of course, you know, Xana was up. And so often these individuals have these sort of delusions in terms of how everything's going to go. Their fantasy is one thing, and then how it all plays out is another, which I do believe is a big reason why he left and left Dylan Mortensen. In this police report, I believe Dylan says that she thinks he saw her. So I think that was another detail, you know, the first time for us to know that at least she believed he saw her.
And it was more of a, I got to get out of here because this has already gone so far awry. And not continue to push his luck, I guess, of no one stopping him, or I don't know. I mean, it is shocking that it went as far as it did. Do you think that really threw him for a loop afterwards? The fact that he may have gone in initially just wanting to target one person, and then at the end of the day, he's murdered four people, and he wanted to go back to live his life. He did go back to live his life for a brief period of time, teaching and all of that. But he was described as being very different, more distant than he had been in the past, more even laid back, some even said, than he had been in terms of grading and such. Was this something that really pushed this killer's psyche to a different place that maybe he was not expecting it to go after walking out of that horror scene?
Well, Tony, it's such a great question. And I think that the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. Mm-hmm. When you look at that photo after the crime that morning in front of the shower with the white button-up shirt and that smile and that, you know, selfie that he made, to me, he was so happy and so pleased with how everything went. I think the fact that, of course, he wasn't discovered that morning, I think it was, when I look at that, I see somebody who's near elated and wants to, you know, take a photo of this perfect moment. That's how I see it. So while I don't think it came out exactly how he wanted, I think he was happy with what he had done.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I want. Like, did he walk out of there going, oh, I did better than I thought I would in a sick, horrible way, you know, or was that like, oh my God, this really shook him to his core of how wrong it went or could have went for him had he been stopped, if one of the attacks back would have injured him or taken him out as well. But I think you're right. With that adulation and that picture of that thumbs up, he was on a high. He was on one hell of a high after exiting that house. What do we know about the second possible knife that was used?
Well, I don't know if it was a knife or a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it described as a weapon.
Okay.
And it has a pattern that is a some sort of plaid type pattern. So I'm actually in my spare time trying to figure out what that could be that he would have had, because I think it's very interesting. Did he bring another weapon for the purpose of, you know, fighting and mutilating,
mm-hmm.
Beyond just attacking with a knife? It seems odd to me that would be a plan when you have a K-bar, which is a killing machine. You don't mm-hmm. really need anything else. But I find it very interesting. I also find it interesting, was there anything in that room that he took a hold of that left that pattern in Kaylee? But what I find most interesting is that law enforcement doesn't seem to know either.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, out of all these documents that we're starting to pull over, and we're starting to see some from Pullman too, Tony, we're learning that they don't know much more than they've already released.
Yeah.
That's the big surprise to me.
That is a big surprise. Basically what was out was out. There wasn't a lot more that we were going to find out. You said, I want to talk about the pattern that you said that they was on one of the victims. You said almost like a plaid type pattern. So we're talking about a weapon of some sort that would leave that imprint after a strike, or how are they describing this?
Yeah, that's how I'm seeing it. Like a waffle type pattern, you know, with the squares going both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, What would he have had that could make that? That could be so many things. It could be anything from a glove pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, it's not the handle of that K-bar. That's what I had thought it could have possibly been, but I don't think that's what it was. And so I just find that whole thing interesting, that there is this second weapon that's been discussed, that it seems law enforcement never figured it out.
Can you see the screen right now?
Yes.
This is the sharpener again. I brought it back up on a white backdrop, and it has these indents on it. It has, if you were to push that into somebody, I mean, it looks like it would leave a line pattern. And if you were to do it multiple times, I could see that leaving a plaid type pattern. I don't know how big the plaid type pattern was, if that would correspond with that. But if what he had in his hand when he was leaving was a sharpener, I could see that having possibly been used as a weapon as well alongside the knife. If I don't know, if we're trying to look at things he might have had with him, I do wonder about that. What is your thoughts on that?
Well, I will say this, you know, the Bureau, they're very good as mm-hmm. pattern experts. You know, they were the ones that identified the vehicle of Brian Koberger, you know, what kind it was, just really seeing a flash at one point going across that video. But unless the Bureau analyst who's looking at it believes they can say something to a certainty, they mm-hmm. typically won't make a decision, even if they think they might know.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you anything, law enforcement, at least some, just like with the motive, you know, nobody's really saying, you know, what the motive was mm-hmm. from the law enforcement prosecution side. But you can bet there's a lot of beliefs out there with the people that were involved. But because they can't 100% say, they're just mm-hmm. not saying, Tony.
Yeah.
That's the wonderful thing about being on this side of the mic, right?
Mm-hmm.
This side of the investigation is we can more freely, as not being current law enforcement, be able to take and look at these different instruments. When I looked, though, at that pattern, and I actually pulled it up, and I don't know if that's what they're describing. Mm-hmm. It's not quite meeting what I'm seeing and how they described it.
Mm-hmm.
But and as you said, does it really matter? Well, I can guarantee it matters to the Gonzalez family. They sure want to know every detail. I've also found it very interesting in what they're saying. You know, they're so upset that all these details are coming out just now
mm-hmm.
to the public and to them simultaneously. They felt they should have known it. But then if you look what the Chapins say, they feel like they've been treated so fairly
yeah.
and that they described it all as very transparent.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, I mean, that's the reality of perception. You know, you can have one conversation with one person and give the exact same information and have it with another, and it may be perceived completely different. Even if it's the exact, cause we're all so different in how we're, you know, filtering all of that through us, especially through trauma, because that's going to very much affect how one is going to come out the other side of it. So I can see how that can be dramatically different. You had said just a few minutes earlier, basically what they released is what they had. What else were you expecting to see? What else did you think they were gonna come out with in terms of evidence against Koberger that they were holding back for trial?
Man, I tell you, I'm surprised there's not more at that crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, just with the struggle that we know happened with Zanna,
mm-hmm.
they describe it as an intense struggle that took place in that room. They talk about spatter. They talk about the smearing. We still don't know yet who smeared what.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean Koberger took his gloved hand and, you know, was wiping it off because mm-hmm. it was so drenched in blood? Does that mean Zanna smeared as she crawled? We don't know the details, but we know it was a huge struggle. And with that, even though he was donned with, you know, a lot of protective equipment over his face, his shirt and everything and so forth, I'm still surprised nothing else, with no sweat
mm-hmm.
that would have came from his face, no blood, no other skin cell DNA
mm-hmm.
anywhere from the fight, from mm-hmm. the struggle. So I always thought that there was a good possibility we would see him leave some of himself behind, an eyebrow hair.
Yeah.
And I'm being serious.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of hair. You just can't enter a scene, typically Lockhart's theory. You just can't enter and not leave and not take with you. And it seems he magically went in there in some respects. And he left his DNA, but I thought there might be more.
Well, I mean, I guess the question is, I mean, you can leave it, but it also has to be found as well. And certainly they were in there combing through that scene. There was a lot of people that were coming and going initially from the scene, especially when the friends came and found all of this. But I mean, how secure of a scene was it? When we look back on this, you know, did they look thorough enough? And I'm not trying to question, I'm not trying to insult, so nobody take me that way. I think, you know, the investigators, they got him, and they knew much more than we knew early on. So I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to retrospectively look at this and go, was there, I mean, did they clear the scene too quickly? Was there more investigation, more digging that should have been done forensically at that scene than was?
Well, again, such a good point, because now we know from this police report, one of the boys picked up a knife and walked in and said, "Hey, there's a knife. I found a knife." Like, put it back.
Mm-hmm.
So what else did they possibly touch? We know footprints would have been all throughout there. You see what I mean? They were leaving parts of themselves that I'm sure were found and they had to be ruled out. I'm sure we're going to see a lot about that. But this was not a protected crime scene in the least
mm-hmm.
Because of the amount of individuals who were in and around it.
Mm-hmm.
And even law enforcement. I mean, there were yeah. a lot of law enforcement officers that went up and through that scene.
Yeah.
And before the state crime lab came and were able to do their job. I also found it interesting that they came back, I believe it was January 6th. What some people might not know is once you give your inventory, which they did on FD 597's in huge parts of this case, but it doesn't matter. Once you do a warrant and then you submit your inventory, you're not allowed to go back without a secondary warrant. Mm-hmm. Yet I saw on January 6th, they went back, and apparently it was because they missed some things. Blood on, I think it was a piece of furniture and other things. I mean, they took all sorts of things out there on January 6th, mm-hmm. which is such a delay, really, from the initial moments that they were there and were extracting information. I always thought that was problematic, Tony. You know, maybe it's just the FBI supervisor thing going, but, you know, y'all knew when you went into a search warrant situation, a scene like this, you better get everything while you had care, custody, and control of it. Once it was relinquished, even though I understand it was protected, once it was relinquished, you know, you don't want to have to go back. Mm-hmm. Again and again, and you want to do the job right the first time.
Yeah.
That kind of bothered me, Tony. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, no. Were you surprised the digital evidence or lack thereof of digital evidence? What we heard officially is that he wiped it. I mean, that's been the excuse. I mean, we hear so many stories where people wipe their data, but it still is retrieved. Was he just a step or two ahead where he really did wipe it to the extent where, you know, nobody could get it back? Or was there just not the data there to begin with?
He was 10 steps ahead, Tony. I tell you, I just watched another interview of the current police chief, and he talked about how he wiped it as he went. Mm-hmm. He said words to that effect. So you're talking about, you know, whatever he searched, then he would probably erase that archive. And he also, they were very specific that he had particular software, you know, programs mm-hmm. to erase. And I can tell you from all the training I've gone through on this, it is hard to erase your digital footprint for mm-hmm. your average Joe.
Yeah.
But there are programs you can purchase. We go over them all and, you know, study that, that people can purchase and do to wipe their digital footprint. Really, the only thing they found in his phone, Tony, and this was another, you know, thing we learned, they found some corroboration. In other words, what they already knew, they were able to corroborate with things. They found a couple of searches about the incident, you know, looking up news information, mm-hmm. obviously the selfies that we've seen, but very little other than that. And so when people say that there was absolutely no interaction with Kaylee or Maddie or any of them, and that there was nothing that he did. In other words, for instance, was he the guy in the woods and did he take any pictures? Mm-hmm. We'll never know it because it's wiped. If the FBI can't get it, it's not gettable. And for people who think that when you erase it, it can't disappear. It can if you do the proper steps and have the proper software.
There are ways. Yeah. Without a doubt, if you know what you're doing, you could erase your digital footprint if it's on a native device by you. If it's out to the cloud, then you got a few more problems going on. But if he kept everything really, really close to the vest, there's a lot of ways that he could have easily gotten away with it. And it appears that he did. What, I mean, this is just, you know, purely theoretical, but had this thing gone to trial at some point without the digital footprint, you got the DNA, that's pretty damning, without a doubt. And I don't want to, you know, poo-poo that by any means, but I there was a lot of things I thought, most of us thought we were going to see. We were going to see some sort of relationship or some sort of attempt at a relationship on Koberger's part to communicate with one of these victims or something. But none of that would have been there. How strong of a case would this have been had it gotten to a jury?
I still think it was really strong. They had all of that video surveillance of the vehicle and all those different times in and around that house. Even the police stop that they recently released where mm-hmm. he admitted not having his seatbelt on. He gets a $10 ticket.
Yeah.
And then he does the Columbo at the end. Right. For those old enough to remember Columbo, he'd be all done with his questioning. And then he'd turn around and ask an important question. Mm-hmm. And so he turns around and Columbo's the officer. And he says, by the way, did you even know I didn't have my seatbelt on? And the officer, you could tell, is so young and so rookie, kind of giggles and says, "No, I didn't even look." In other words, he told on himself, right?
He did. He did. Because I believe he says in that video, "I'm just trying to be honest."
I know. He has no problem being honest when he knows they've got him.
Yeah.
Right? He knew about radar. And then he figured the cop had seen it, and that's why he was being asked. He gave the cop way too much credit. And I think in this case, he knew he was nabbed. He couldn't get out from underneath it. You also have the fact he purchased that K-bar knife. They had that down. That doesn't make any sense. You also have just the fact that he turned his phone off during that 2 hours. I think that is so incriminating.
It is.
You have all the driving he did, the fact he came back at 9 o'clock, 9:30, I think it was, I think to look for the sheath in case he dropped it on the way out, and to say, what in the heck? Why isn't this place crawling with police? And then I could just see himself going, thumbs up, man. I got away with this. I did this perfectly. I think he would have been convicted. The bigger question for me is, boy, if that DNA would not have been, you know, if he wouldn't have left the knife sheath, I don't know if he would have ever been convicted.
Or caught, for that matter. You look at some areas where maybe he would have been with the car, they might have narrowed that down, but convicted? I don't know. I don't know about that. I think the scary prospect is it might have taken until another, you know, incident, incidents putting it lightly, another massacre before he got caught, if he found a way to flub that up. I don't know. There's a lot of questions as to what if, but we all do now know who it is and who is behind bars. So that will be a win for law enforcement at the end of the day.
Yep, it's a win.
Yeah. Jennifer Coffendaff, a retired FBI special agent, thanks for joining us and discussing Koberger as always.
Thank you, Tony.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.